This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. You are listening to Love in the 21st Century. We are on every Tuesday from 5 to 6 p.m., hosted tonight by myself, Tamara Wickma. Love in the 21st Century is a talk show with live call-ins, interviews, and discussions on the philosophical to the practical look of love, from romantic relationships to connections with humanity. One-third dating insights, one-third self-love guide, one-third compassion training. And tonight it's going to be on that same tangent. We're talking about love. We're looking at the dynamics in which ways we love. And tonight we're going to have Ty Hammond on, a thought-provoking real-life leader, talking about the art of relating. Ty is an innovative thinker and supporter of helping others get the most out of their life and the relationship and work. Listen in, call in as we waltz through and talk about how we are in relationship with everything. The number to get on the air is 895-1114. Thank you for tuning in to Love in the 21st Century. Welcome to Love in the 21st Century here in Chico, California. It is raining softly, so pleasantly, and such a great time to be having a conversation about such a meaningful topic, love. So thank you for tuning in. And Ty, you're there on the phone with me?
I am. Thank you, Tamara, for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining me. And I introduced you a bit when we were at the top of the hour, just as a innovative thinker and thought-provoking leader in talking about the art of relating. So maybe you could give our guests a little bit more of a synopsis of who you are before we dive into our conversation.
Great. Yeah, it sounds good. You know, my world really centers around relationships. You know, I work as, essentially, I would call it a relationship coach. So I end up working with organizations, doing training now around communication, emotional intelligence, and things of that sort. A lot of what I do is helping groups to have meaningful conversations that they need to have or aren't having very, very well. The reason that I got into that work is because I care so deeply about the relationships that we have in life. My work is really just one part of the expression of the importance that relationships play in my life, though. It really, I would say, the art of relating, as you put it, which I really like, has really been a center point in how my how I walk through my day-to-day reality. It comes up in absolutely everything, and I just wanted to clarify that when I talk about relationships, I'm talking about relationship with everything. So of course with people, because those are some of the most dynamic and often confusing and joyful and thought-provoking and hard and wonderful relationships that we have, but our relationship with absolutely everything, it can be concepts and ideas, things, something as simple as brushing your teeth or the concept of death, or your relationship with yourself, of course. So I don't know if that does it for you, but that's just what came to mind as you posed it for me.
Absolutely. A beautiful little synopsis into the world of who you are, Ty Hammond. Absolutely. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And something that you mentioned before, just you said that your work is just sort of a facet of your interest in relationship and relationship with everything. And so before we dive into what exactly you mean by relationship with everything, because I would love to know what my relationship is like with my toothbrush, where would you say it started for you? Like, is there a particular story, a particular time where it was just like your fascination or your interest in this thing called relating sort of started to develop and you're like, oh yeah, that's where I want to spend my time.
It's a good question. You know, to a large extent, actually, I feel like it's something that's just naturally in me.
Mm-hmm.
There is, a drive to understand myself through my relationship with the world. I think it probably really solidified for me when I was, you know, in seventh and eighth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really wanting this feeling of belonging.
Right.
I was quite a challenged young man. I had a lot of anger and behavioral issues. And I wanted so deeply to be liked and to be related to and to be understood. And I just wasn't. Mm-hmm. I really wasn't at all. You know, and I don't think that this is a, something that is unique to me. I think it's something that a lot of us experience. But because of that incredibly formidable time, I think that I ended up, you know, reorienting my world in a way through lots of different trials and tribulations and life experiences in order to help me understand how can I relate to the world and to other people in a way that deepens my connection and a feeling of belonging and ultimately a sense that that I belong here. You know, that I have a place. So I was challenged by that in my youth. And, you know, I just internally, to some extent, I just haven't been able to accept the notion that I didn't have a place. So I think that's what kind of drove that deeper introspection in that way.
Yes, fascinating. You know, I think that it all sort of begins much sooner than we think, like what our fascination is, like as you mentioned, with relating, and my fascination with love. And in that same sort of sense of like, there's got to be this bigger understanding, this bigger question that's being asked of us to come through, to be able to connect with other people, because it seems like if we're not getting that need met in some way by our community, friends, or family, I sort of, you know, we go to this place of like, okay, am I not worthy of this? If I'm not receiving it, I'm not worthy of it. And I mean, the kind of like, that's the breakdown, we'll say. And then there's the, what I like to say, you know, to the breakthrough, which is like, well, that's just a silly notion that I wouldn't be worthy of it, because if you're worthy of it, you know, if those other people over there that I see are worthy of it, then why would I not be worthy of it? And so then it sort of, you know, begets the question of like, okay, well, then let me start to understand this a bit better so that I can actually be an active agent in getting my own needs met, which it sounds like is what you have done through your, you know, your passion and your work and relating.
I love that. I love what you just said there, being an active agent and relating, because I think ultimately that's what it takes. Unfortunately, or just realistically, you know, the world that we live in now is unlike the world that we evolved in as humans. So we evolved in, you know, essentially small tribes where belonging is a basic human necessity. And it was quite a bit easier, right, when we lived in small tribes and we literally were interdependent on each other. We depended on each other for food and for childcare and all these things. But as we become more and more independent, that kind of social fabric, especially in, you know, countries like the United States that are so individualistic, that need for each other, you know, physically, at least, you know, we can go to the grocery store and get whatever food we need. You know, we can fill our time with television or whatever other distractions. We don't need each other to survive. But yet, there is still a deep, deep need on a personal, psychological, spiritual level to feel that belonging.
Absolutely.
And so it's kind of up to us in this new era where technology has far, you know, evolved much faster than us. You know, we're trying to catch up now without the benefit of, I would think, you know, a culture of people who show us how to relate. You know, I feel like in many cases, you and I, in our generation and the generations before us, have been a generation without elders.
Definitely.
Without people that show us what it takes to be in the world.
Mm-hmm.
What it takes to relate to things healthily.
Right.
Right, what it takes to actually be okay with needing help and with helping.
Right. Yeah. So. And what you're saying is just reminding me of, you know, just the reality I think that many people are living with, of this sense of lack, of not seeming like they have what they need, yet they may have all those things we talked about, like going to the grocery store and paying their bills and having, you know, having a job and all those things that like seemingly are like, okay, you have it, you've made it, you've created what you need to create. But then there's still that sense of lack because there's this missing connection that they don't have with one another, that they don't even know that they're missing. They don't even know how to name it, because like you were mentioning about not having elders or guidance to show us that there is a benefit, there is a strength in interconnectedness that, you know, we don't necessarily even know what we're looking for. So fascinating.
Well, yeah, I think that's why relating and the art of relating is so incredibly powerful. You know, I'm a big fan of etymology, the root of where words come from. I think that words are incredibly powerful, and oftentimes we throw them around without really knowing what they mean, you know. And the etymology of the word relate is literally to recount or to tell. It's about bringing back. So when we are in relation to something, right, that relation is telling us a story and bringing back information for us to tell us about us and ourselves in the world. So that's the beautiful. When we're feeling that we're missing this connection, when we have this feeling of missing something, it's actually all right there. And we can gather information for ourselves, for our fulfillment, for our deeper understanding of our true natures by paying attention to what we are in relation to, because it has an information. The way that we relate to everything has a story to tell us about ourselves.
So would you mind diving a bit deeper into that with us and letting us know what that means, like the to be in deep relationship or to understand our relating to everything, as you mentioned, but let's, you know, maybe start with something a bit more tangible, like to our toothbrush, like you mentioned.
Yeah, well, let's take for example, brushing our teeth, right? How about the act of brushing our teeth, mm-hmm. right? We can simply, mindlessly, brush our teeth or not, right? That's kind of a silly example, but one that I actually use quite often, right? And our relationship to that is, you know, my relationship to brushing my teeth can be just something that I do because I have to do it.
Mm.
That's kind of devoid of meaning, mm-hmm. right? It doesn't really bring me any fulfillment. You know, but I have a choice, and this is the beauty about, you know, when, and this is one of the things that I really love about being in relationship. When you are in relationship, you are an agent of change. Mm-hmm. You are not, there's no way, once you realize that you are in relationship, there's no way to just be a victim, because anything that you are in relationship with, you have an influence over.
Mm-hmm.
You may not be able to change what happens to you, right, in relationship with that thing, but you always get to choose how you are in relationship to it, choose how you respond to it. So, for example, with brushing your teeth, right, I can just look at it as something that I have to do, and it's kind of like mindless, and maybe I'm already in bed, I'm like, oh, I forgot to brush my teeth, and I get up and I do it. Or, you know, I can choose to be in relationship with brushing my teeth in a way in which, you know, when I brush my teeth, I'm grateful for the fact that I have good teeth,
mm-hmm.
right? Or grateful for the opportunity that, you know, that I get to wash my mouth or even just say a prayer for, you know, speaking truthful words, right? I can take a moment just to, since it's such a sensational, you know, physical sensational activity, to bring a little mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
It's an easy way to bring mindfulness to my mouth, right? And we talk a lot about mindfulness and how do we do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, just in a simple kind of one-off thinking about it, that's one way in which a very simple act can actually become quite meaningful.
Absolutely. So as you were mentioning before, taking that, what the relating is bringing back to you, what meaning it is bringing back into you, that moment is sort of that in lies the relationship, is what you're sharing?
Yeah, well, I also, you know, I use this a lot. The way that we do anything is the way that we do everything.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
So if, I go through my day mindlessly kind of not recognizing I'm in relationship with all of these things, you know, and what does that have to say about how I'm in, you know, a relationship with other things?
Right. Absolutely.
You know, and of course, brushing your teeth is like the most simple example. And of course, you know, you can think about something more. You can think about your relationship to anger,
mm.
or your relationship to yourself when you get angry. Right, that's when it begins to get really, really kind of juicy.
Yeah. So the relationship to ourselves, to myself, when I get angry. So, what is the meaning or the intention that I'm bringing to that moment when I get angry?
Well, I think it's just kind of, you know, paying attention to You know, I mean, I would ask you, you know, when you get angry, you know, how are you in relationship to that? How are you? It's both like
resisting.
There's anger. There's kind of what happens, right? But after, right. You know, after you get angry, and I'm, you know, I'm speaking from my own personal experience on a journey with anger in my life, right? Mm-hmm. I've been in relationship, and, you know, relationships are dynamic. That's why they're a ship, because they're traversing water, which is not solid, and they're going somewhere, right? Yeah.
Traversing water, and they're going somewhere. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I liked what you said before, how you do one thing is how you do all things. That's the way that I've always heard it. And it's so mm-hmm. true, and it's such a powerful statement. And, you know, just if we just slow that down a bit and we think about it, how I do one thing is how I do all things. And it's like mm-hmm. to really apply that to our lives and, yeah, how true that can be and how it can really just catch, you know, we can catch ourselves in it and be like, wow, how meaningful or how intentional or how present am I being to my life if I want it any, mm-hmm. you know, if I want my life to be XYZ and I want my relating or my relationships to be XYZ, how present and accountable am I to that opposed to just saying that's what I want.
Right. So, and it's there at any moment. So if you're, you know, if you're feeling confused mm-hmm. about, you know, what the answers are to any given, you know, dilemma that you're having, or if you're feeling despair, what's your relationship to that confusion? What's your relationship to the despair? Do you despise it?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's why I say, like, with anger, you know, what's your relationship with anger? I've gone through so many iterations of it with all kinds of emotions and experiences, right? So with anger, it's like, you know, I used to get angry, and I used to, you know, in the moment, I would love it, and then I would hate myself for it. And then I got to a point where, you know, I had essentially gotten to a point where I was good at not getting angry, but I hated anger itself, and I judged it mm. in other people so deeply because I had had such challenge with it,
yeah.
right? And my relationship with anger needed to evolve, you know? And so my relationship with anger now is that, you know, I'm not, I allow myself to get angry, right? I've, you know, cultivated different ways to be with it. But when it happens, I'm not going to chastise myself for it or judge myself for it as deeply as I have in the past, because I've chosen to be in relationship with it in a different way.
Mm-hmm. So would it be safe to say that the ideal, or, you know, if there is such a thing as an ideal, or in these ideas of relating, that we would have a positive relationship with these various degrees of things in our life, whether it's our toothbrush, our anger, or I do want to jump in the conversation of relating to money, because it's a very real thing, I think, for a lot of people, myself included.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's the idea that what you're saying is, you know, to not necessarily change the emotional reaction to it, like you were saying with anger, but to maybe change the opinion or the judgment associated with it, whether it's positive or negative.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to put it. You know, there's something that there's a difference between trying to control what the relationship is.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, and how it looks,
mm-hmm.
versus relating to what is, right? And so I use I often use a metaphor. If you can think of a relationship as like a seed,
mm-hmm.
right? Now, and it's easiest to probably conceptualize this in terms of a relationship with a person, right? Mm-hmm. So you meet a person, and your relationship with that person is like a seed, right? Let's say it's an apple tree seed. Right? You can put that seed in the ground, and you can want it to be an orange tree all day long. You can water it and nurture it and pray over it and sing songs to it and expect it to be an orange tree for as, you know, you can do that day in and day out. Mm-hmm. But if it's an apple tree seed, it's going to grow an apple tree.
Right.
So we don't necessarily, there's something about the natural progression of things and the nature of what is,
mm-hmm.
right? And allowing that, right? So I don't get to choose whether it's an apple tree or an orange tree. And in fact, when I do that, and I have done that, right? When I've tried to make an apple tree into an orange tree, when I've tried to make a relationship into something that it isn't, mm-hmm. it causes a hell of a lot of pain.
Because
it's impossible. But the question becomes, how can I be in relationship to the reality, right? Mm-hmm. Of what this relationship is, you know? And it's like, I can, you know, if you know, I can sit there and it, you know, grows this these beautiful apples, and I can just be, if I'm not in good relationship with it, I can just be pissed off the entire time instead of just enjoying the apples, right? Just wishing that it was oranges the entire time. You know, or trying to make it oranges somehow. I don't know if that metaphor makes much sense. But.
It does. I get it. And I think so often we actually do that in life. In life, in reality, well, you know, we'd substitute the apples and the oranges for people or for work or for, friendships or things that we want in the world. Like, you can really substitute those for just about anything, and how often we are wanting something to be different and relating to it in a way that it, as if it were different, and hoping and arguing with it and kind of making, wanting to force it into a different shape, a different mold, a different fruit altogether, when that's really not what it is. And how much easier it would be if we just were actually relating with reality. And I remember, you know, having several conversations with friends about relationships throughout the years, and in my own my own place as I was transitioning through a relationship in the past. And there was this moment. It was like this aha moment. It was like, oh, I have to take the words that are coming out of his mouth. and it sounds silly to say, but it's like there's a part of us that's always filtering and deciphering and trying to like make sense out of what somebody else is saying, because, you know, we understand what they're really trying to say. And I think that's, if that tends to be a pattern in a relationship, it's a pattern that I see in relationship, then we forget that we just need to take reality as what it is. Like, if somebody's saying something to you, then you just need to take what they're saying. And even if they do mean something different, it's not really, that's not the point. The point is to be relating to the reality. And what's interesting is when we start relating to the reality, like you said, how much things can shift. Shift in a positive way and shift in a negative way. But shift, because now things are actually being, you know, counted and validated in what's happening here and now in this moment, not in in an idea or in an illusion.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the basis of like the Buddhist teaching of not rejecting what is and not grasping towards something that isn't, right?
Right.
And it's a, you know, it's a deep lifetime, lifelong practice.
Right.
That all of us learn essentially through struggling. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that, you know, no one on this earth is, you know, not experience the pain that comes through trying to make something into something that it's not.
Right.
You know, and it's through, for me, you know, in my path thus far, it's been finding my agency. I love that word, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it invokes empowerment, and it invokes an ownership in my life. Not like, I'm not just a passive victim to what happens to me in my life, even if what happens to me in my life is something that I don't like, or something that I don't want. I still get to choose, because I'm in relationship to everything that happens in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I have some power and some agency in how I choose to respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been life-saving for me.
Absolutely. So interesting to think about in regards to just the actual idea of relating. And so talking about this concept, you know, relating as a concept, as something that we have choice over and we have active participation in how in which we relate, and then kind of laying it over, like almost like a transparency over a model of relating that we've been given, that we are, you know, we are just basically at the whim of our experiences in our relationships, and more maybe an unconscious approach to the way in which we live. And so just, you know, wow, just really being mesmerized by that idea of being like, wow, overlaying it and giving that much more power to ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, I think I love what you're saying there. And essentially what I hear you saying is doing the work of deconditioning.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the culture in our lives and given to us by our family and by society and by school and the expectations that everyone has for how you should relate to stuff is very, very deep.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of, the normalization of victimhood.
Right.
Right. And, in our society where, I can go to you, I can be like, geez, Jody is such a jerk. And you'd be like, oh, yeah, definitely. Right. Mm-hmm. Rather than challenging me on, right. Cause it's just so accepted. Right. So that's what I'm saying. It is taking a massive amount of personal responsibility to choose to see yourself as a powerful agent that is in relationship with everything, right? Because when you choose to do that, you choose to not be a victim.
Right.
And when you do that, then, that is the what I have begun to experience in my life is a path to freedom.
Mm.
And a deeper and deeper freedom, because I'm not just a passive bystander and victim to the things that happen in life.
Yes. Active participation in the lives we live. It's a powerful experience. Absolutely. So I want to go to the question of relating to money, because it's one that is very, very real in my life. And as I mentioned, in other people's lives. And so I'm just curious if you have any, insights that you care to share on maybe your own relating or what you may have gathered from your work with other people and their experiences in relating to the, one of the most powerful driving forces in the material world.
Totally. I'll share with you a story, and I'll just say that, my relationship to money it's forefront. It's absolutely forefront and center for me right now. I have a 4-year-old son. I'm wanting to create, a life of abundance for myself and for him, for people in my community to have those resources. So it's super timely and relevant for me, and I think for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll just tell you a story real quickly, and this is just one of the many turning points that I've had in my own relationship with money. So there was a period of time in my life when I was traveling, and I literally had, two pairs of pants and everything that I owned in a backpack, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I had this relationship with money, which was that essentially I felt like I didn't need it, right, in order to survive, and that what I needed would come to me when I needed it. And there was also almost a little bit of a demonization of it, because I had seen how much, I believed that money was a source of a lot of challenges and problems that we saw in society. So I was carrying with me all of these ideas, and you can imagine traveling, right? I did end up getting what I needed in order to move around, but I certainly didn't have a lot of money, right? And I met with a woman, and she ended up doing we did a trade, right? I'm a massage therapist, and that's how I kind of like made my money traveling, as I would do massage therapy. And there was this healer, and she essentially had me scan my body, right, and come up and tell her whatever images that I saw as I scanned my body. And I got down to my knees, and I said that I saw, like a monk like sitting with a bowl, just like kind of begging for the, the alms bowl or something. And when we got, part of her teaching from that was she said to me pretty directly, and whether it's true or not really doesn't matter, what she said really landed for me. And she said, how you've already lived the ascetic, reclusive life where you have given away all of your possessions and, lived without nothing, and you don't need to do that because you've already gotten the lessons from it. And in that moment, I was like free from that relationship with money that I had had, which was really, really limiting me. Just in that moment, just that one simple affirmation. You know, because I was on this journey with money and in some way feeling like I had something to prove, right, to myself or because of, you know, what I felt about money. And of course, it's changed many, many times since then, you know, in small ways and in big ways. But I can tell you, I pretty much can guarantee that I wouldn't have had the success that I've had thus far, and I wouldn't have made the money that I've made if I had not changed my relationship to money. If I still felt like I didn't really need a lot of it, and if I still felt like I'd just get what I needed when I needed it just to survive, and if I still kind of demonized it, I wouldn't have made what I've made. I wouldn't have called in what I've called in. How could I? I'm not a kind of person that calls in demonic elements into my life, right?
Absolutely.
So it's interesting to look at, you know, how are we relating to money? You know, what is your relationship? Do you feel like money is an evil thing? If money is an evil thing and you're not a person that, you know, wants evil in your life, not necessarily saying that even evil, you know, this is just an example, right? Mm-hmm. But you're likely not going to call it into your life.
Right. Absolutely.
Right.
So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to FM 90.1, KZFR Chico. My name's Tamara. You're listening to Love in the 21st Century, and we are talking with Ty Hammond about the art of relating, and currently we're talking about a relationship to money, because it's just such, I feel like, such a pertinent topic in this world. It just really is. And as you were saying, Ty, that same, you know, I have that same sentiment of, you know, in this place of needing, you know, I've been in this place of changing the dynamics and the relationship I have to money in the form that, you know, I feel like it has been passed to me in many different forms of, you know, being the root of all evil, of just, you know, being greedy people want money, and this sort of this complex of negativity around money. And so really having to challenge my own thoughts, you know, why do I have these values or views towards money? And beyond that, though, like just recently diving into what's behind that as well, is not even just the view of, okay, money is negative, but what holds that kind of in place in this, like, also a relationship to scarcity mentality, you know, like the idea of, maybe again going back to a original topic we were talking when you brought up the story about being in junior high and feeling that sense of belonging, and I shared that, you know, I feel like it always comes back to this feeling of unworthiness, of like, am I worthy of this experience? And so just bringing that back forward here to this part of the conversation, that sometimes around money, some what's beneath that, you know, beneath the I lack, or it's evil, or it's not good enough, is a true feeling of not being worthy of the things in which we want.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I personally think you're hitting it on the head, and I want to just bring it back to the word relate.
Right.
It means that when we relate to something, it's recounting or telling us or bringing back information about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day, our relationship with money, because, you know, if you decide to buy into this notion that reality is all one thing, right? Money is not separate from you.
Right.
So your relationship to money relates back a story to your relationship with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it gets really, really juicy. You know, that's where paying attention to that really has the power to upend. You know, I think that at the root of the stuff that gets in the way of us being in right relation with ourselves and with everything are mistaken beliefs.
Yes.
And spells that have been cast by, you know, people in our lives who have said things that get stuck into our consciousness and they become our narrative.
right,
for our story around money or around relationships. And they're in there and they kind of drive this whole creation of the world around us. You know, and that's why the work of relating requires such deep and intentional introspection, is because that stuff is in there deep. You know, it's not just as simple as, gotta stop looking at money as the root of all evil.
Right.
Right? It's not that simple.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because the only way that you could possibly believe that is if you believe that you yourself were evil in some way.
Right. Or that it would be evil to desire it. And so that in there lies the disconnect with attempting to create more of it in your life, because why would you want to create something that you did, you know, had some sort of disdain towards?
Exactly.
Fascinating.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm. I feel like this all brings us to the question, and, you know, asking maybe in your perspective, in the time that you have spent, you know, just questioning relating in general, like, is there a set of steps? Is there a sort of simple way in order to begin the conversation, begin the introspection with ourselves in understanding greater our relationship to all things? Like, is there, you know, like a step one, we'll say, in terms of, you know, our relationship with money or our relationship with anger?
Yeah. I'll share with you, there's, essentially, it's been a, and this is, there's a four-step process that I came up with, and essentially it's a process, but really it was the evolution of a prayer for myself. It came out of a recent period, I'd say within the last, you know, 3 or 4 years of a lot of emotional upheaval in my world and damaged relationships and, you know, lots of things. So, I'll share with you that, and hopefully that speaks to it a little bit. And I just want to start by saying, you know, take what works and leave what doesn't. I certainly don't have the answer to this stuff, but I'll share with you a prayer that really has worked for me. The first step was really praying to be as absolutely honest with myself as I possibly could be. And this first step is probably the hardest piece, because it's hard to be honest when you're working your way through lies that you've been telling yourself for your entire life. It's hard to see what's true.
Absolutely.
So even just praying to have the eyes to see, the ears to hear, and the heart to feel what is even true in the first place, maybe that's the first step. And then the second step would be, you know, to be as absolutely honest with yourself as possible. So when you get that level of honesty, what I have noticed in my path is that there's a tendency, and this comes back to our relationship with ourselves, right? Our relationship with whatever we're seeing. Because oftentimes when we're super duper honest with ourselves, we're seeing stuff that we normally don't like. That's the reason that we have hidden it away.
Right.
Right? Is because somehow it's hurtful to look at. So the next step there is really to be as absolutely kind and compassionate to yourself as you possibly can. Because that's what we need in order to learn something new. I like this idea of, instead of discipline, of gentle persistence.
Mm-hmm.
It's an idea of, so I have a 4-year-old son. I'll just give you a small story. You know, I live in a communal house, and somebody has one of my roommates has a tiger, a stuffed tiger, and my son was picking it up by the tail and winging it around, and I essentially needed to tell my son to stop picking it up by his tail, right? And I told him one time, and then, he did it like 3 or 4 more times. And I just said, hey, Jude, remember, don't pick it up by its tail, right? Now, the way that we generally talk to it, just gentle persistence, right? I'm just reminding him because he's unlearning what he's normally done, which is just pick the thing up by his tail, right? And so I could say, hey, Jude, I already told you not to pick that up by its tail, go into timeout. And that's generally how we treat ourselves, right? It's like we see something or we hear something for the first time and we think that we're just supposed to completely transform immediately, when really what we need is this gentle persistence from ourselves, this gentle, kind, compassionate reminder. Hey, remember this, when you mess up, right? When you pick the tiger up by its tail again, remind yourself to put it down, to pick it up in a different way. So that kindness and that compassion is a huge piece. You know, the next piece that I would say is, you know, because those are all awareness pieces.
Right.
The next is, you know, requires a next level of courage. And all of this stuff requires an immense amount of courage, right, to look at those spaces that we don't want to see. And it's to really, you know, once you see your truth, right, see what's true for you or see what maybe you're not wanting to look at once you're really, really honest, right, it's to change your behavior to be in integrity with that. And your behavior is your speech, it's your thought, it's your action, you know. And that's where the conditioning is. It's hard because we, you know, are what we believe animates and illustrates what we, you know, think and say and do.
Mm-hmm.
And so it takes some muscle to think and say and do different things from a different way of thinking.
Yes.
Right? And it can be as simple but as challenging as just like saying the inner no, right? Which is a term I use that comes from translation of the I Ching that I use, right? Mm-hmm. And just saying the inner no to something that you know is not serving you anymore. That can be the action.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I think it can be as, you know, as, like I say, it's simple, but it's not necessarily easy. And I like to say it's hard until it's not, right? Mm. Because absolutely everything that we practice gets easier. Everything.
That's the beauty in the practice, right?
That's right.
The more we practice, the better we get. And that's why they call it a practice, because you keep doing it.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And other things become hard. You know, that's the, yes, that's the deepening in the more subtle levels of our experience. And that's a beautiful thing.
Right.
You know, so how are we in relationship to the fact that it never ends? Right?
Such a great question. Such a great question.
You know, are we, you know, so I feel like so much of our, you know, spiritual path sometimes gets caught up in this, like, wanting to achieve some certain sort of state, right? That's the basis of, like, spiritual materialism, mm-hmm, right? But the teachings tell us that it's really letting go of that. That would be the path to enlightenment, right? So how are we in relationship to our own development?
Right.
To the fact that the path is never ending and ongoing.
Hmm.
That we're never actually trying to reach someplace.
Right.
So provocative questions, you know.
Very provocative and such, you know, such a poignant time, right? As we're transitioning at the end of the show, like leaving these thoughts with folks to think about, like what is our relationship to that question and to our continuous growth. And the reality is that we live in sort of a culture that wants to believe that at some certain point, you know, we've achieved, we're done, we're good, we've graduated, we pass go, we collect $200, we get to retire. You know, at some point, there's just like, it's done, it's over with, moving on. And that's just, you know, not necessarily so finite and so simple. And I was recently talking with a dear friend about just that exact topic of, like, as we grow and as we become more of the people that we see ourselves as. You know, some of us feel like there's this part where we're like, God, I've already been here. Like, why am I struggling with this again? And I had a wonderful teacher tell me before, well, no, you see, actually, it's not the same thing. It's actually one layer deeper than where you were before. So it might look like the same thing, it might smell like the same thing, but it's actually something very different because your response is much faster and your awareness to change is much faster and your willingness to act is much faster. So we have to be willing to validate ourselves in our own process as well.
Totally. Well, I see that as a difference between being caught in a loop and, you know, traveling in an upward spiral.
Right? Yes. Upward spiral.
Yeah, which there's movement there, but you're still hitting the same pattern over and over. But you're hitting it at different levels, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I just wanted to say, I think this is, like I said, I'm really into etymology, right? And I looked up the word development because it's something that we use a lot, right? We say personal development. It's interesting because I think that when we think of the word development, we think about building up, right? I mean, that the word has actually been co-opted in recent years to use around construction, where we actually develop like huge, you know, apartment complexes or whatever. But if you look at the root of the word development, it's develop. Envelop means to surround, like to envelop something is to surround it.
Right.
To develop something is to take those surroundings away. So I think of personal development not as gaining anything, right? And it's not about gaining wisdom. It's not about gaining teachings or becoming better at anything.
Mm-hmm.
Personal development is not about becoming more of who you are. You can't possibly become more of who you are. You can only become less of who you're not. So the work of personal development is about identifying and ridding ourselves of illusion, of mistaken beliefs that shroud us from what we and who we truly are.
Beautiful.
And it brings it a little closer to home because then it's not like the answer's outside of us and something that we're separate from.
Right.
Right? It's like it's already, and that's what we're told, it's already in us. We already are it. We can't become more of who we are, right? And we can learn about, you know, what illusions or mistaken beliefs or spells are in our reality in order to help us shed those and naturally begin to be more of, you know, to just naturally to allow more of what we are to be and to be seen.
Let us all be seen.
Please.
Thank you. Please. Sooner the better. Thank you so much, Ty, for taking the time out to join us today on the air. And it's been a really great thought-provoking conversation on the art of relating and how we can just be more present in our own lives in every moment and realize that we are truly in relationship with everything. Thank you so much.
Tamara, I'm so grateful for this conversation. Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm. Have a great night.
You too. Bye now.
Bye. Thank you for tuning in to Love in the 21st Century. We will be on next Tuesday, and it will be hosted by Adam Moe. So tune in 5 o'clock next Tuesday. Coming up next is Ecotopia, Tuesdays from 6 to 7 p.m., they host and they discuss environmental issues with nationally renowned authors and activists. EcoTalk, it's your local link to a global network of folks who know and care about the health of our planet.
Back home, Donald Trump bellowed to those greed-headed corporate executives who have hauled our middle-class jobs out of country. Or, I'll slap you with a big tariff when you try to sell your foreign-made products here. Great stuff, Donnie. And to prove you mean business, I know just the CEO you should target first. Her name is Ivanka. Yes, your daughter. Her multimillion-dollar line of clothing sold through major national retailers ranging from Macy's to Amazon are pitched to America's working women. Yet, practically all of her products are made on the cheap in low-wage factories in China, Indonesia, Vietnam, anywhere except America. Imagine the message it would send to runaway corporations and the integrity it would establish for the Donald if he slapped his first tariffs on Ivanka's goods. But neither Daddy Trump nor the daughter want to discuss the embarrassing conflict between his political bluster and her ethic of runaway capitalism. Instead, she's tried to dodge the issue by saying it doesn't matter since she'll, quote, separate herself from the business if she becomes a White House advisor. Nice try, Ivanka, but the stench of hypocrisy will only grow nastier if you're at your father's side while he castigates and punishes other corporations that have absconded from America. The only way to salvage even an iota of moral virtue is to repatriate the manufacturing of your brand name apparel. And bringing those middle-class jobs home to the good old U.S. of A. would also make a powerful political statement. But no, showing that money trumps both political savvy and the morality of simply doing what's right, Ivanka says her corporate brand will stay offshore. As a spokeswoman put it, "We want to make responsible business decisions." This is Jim Hightower saying, "Really? How does that make America great again?"
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit hightowerlowdown.org.
Thank you for tuning in to Love in the 21st Century. Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Mary's Gone Crackers, manufacturers award-winning gluten-free and certified organic and vegan crackers, pretzels, and cookies in their own dedicated gluten-free facility in Gridley, California. Their products are allergy-friendly and can be found in grocery and health food stores throughout the U.S. and Canada. More information at marysgonecrackers.com or 888-258-1250. So here we are transitioning to Ecotopia. Stay tuned, 90.1 FM, KZFR Chico. I'm going to leave you with some beautiful music by some dear friends of mine, Luke Anderson and A.L. Luz and Jacob Peck, singing about courage. Because, you know, in light of the conversation in The Art of Relating, and as Ty was putting it, it takes courage to be honest with ourselves about the places that we hide from ourselves and the ways that we maybe aren't shown up in the best ways possible. So here's some beautiful music to motivate you along your way, along your evening, along your life.
Spirit. by Tamara Wichma. Thank you so